Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you in part by the estate of Bob Nelson. Bob was a lover of all things San Diego and a longtime supporter of Voice of San Diego and its podcasts. We at Voice of San Diego are honored to have his support during his lifetime and continued support through his estate planning. Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's Program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD.
Yeah, he has like a little Spanish accent when he speaks.
Javier Bardem.
Con permiso, el papel higiénico.
That's what I'm hearing.
Sponsor us.
Welcome to the Voice of San Diego podcast in partnership with News Radio 600 KOGO. I'm Scott Lewis, the CEO and editor-in-chief at Voice of San Diego, and I'm joined, as always, by the managing editor, Andrea Lopez Villafana. What's up, Lopez?
Hey, Lewis.
Also here is the composer of the music you just heard, Jacob McQuinney. What's up, Jacob?
Nothing much. I would never describe myself as a composer. That seems like a very...
There was music that didn't exist that was composed, and you were the one that did that.
Sure. I guess technically it's true, but it just sounds like such a haughty thing to call yourself.
Well, welcome to the new intro of the Voice of San Diego podcast. Are you good with it, Lopez?
Yeah, it's good. It's a vibe.
Nate, this is your baby, Nate John. You're the producer of the show.
Indeed.
You've made this. Somebody said the other day, like, boy, this show has just sounded so great over the last few years. I'm like, that's because we've cut all the garbage out of it that we used to have because you're a good editor. What do you think? The music?
I do. I think the music is good. It's a good vibe. It had the pace that I was hoping to achieve to like start the show off right. I understand people have emotional connections to their podcast music. I'm very cognizant of that. And I think this will be a good vibe going forward in our new era with Lopez and McQuinney.
It's kind of nice. Now, Jacob, you came up with it. Nate, you commissioned the change. What made a change? Now, I've had a lot of people over the years say, like, we need to change that. It's buzzy. There's certainly a lot of people that whistle along with the old one.
Indeed.
And I'm sorry. You maybe figure out another whistle. But
head bop.
But tell me what sort of led to this.
So one of the many emails we've gotten about the music came from your inbox. Someone said, hey, I thought I heard your theme song somewhere. Check out this show that has your theme song. And I listened to it, and just like moments in, I kind of had the realization that we need to lose this theme song for us, as I've grown to appreciate it.
It was one of those sort of free things you can pull down from the mass cloud.
It preceded me. I assume that you were there at the beginning.
Maybe not free, but something you can pay, you know,
very small fee for. It's not ours exclusively.
Yeah, and so now, Jacob, you're a musician.
Recovering.
He does not like titles.
What are you thinking about as you're coming up with this?
I was just trying to do this show justice and make sure that you know, we had something that was fun and interesting. It's, you know, I must say, I must admit, this wasn't written specifically for this show, but I think it works, and it was kind of pulled it out of the vault and dusted it off.
Let's go sit with it one more time.
I'm going to start it from the beginning. That's the part that really speaks to me.
It's got kind of like an 80s, like, it's like you can see the montage of the 80s movies starting,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like the guy, oh my the kids, gosh, we should do like an ad for the podcast, yeah. Like 80s montage style.
Yeah, the kid's like walking his bike to school with his friend.
And it was like the Judd Nelson, like, frozen fist in the air moment.
Yeah. Good stuff, man. Thank you. Coming up on the show this week, it's opening day. A huge day, in fact, for San Diego sports, and it starts with the Padres' first game this season at Petco Park. We could hear the flyover, the jets, the sound of freedom from our office. What kind of monster makes people work on a day like this? SDSU men's basketball will play in the Sweet 16 tonight. Guaranteed victory. You heard it here first.
Scott, you said you had them by five?
Six,
okay.
Well, this you'll know by the time this show comes out how accurate that was. Give me your props after that's proved correct. We wouldn't be Voice, however, without a little sourpussery. Last year, Will Hunsberry found that Petco Park functioned on the back of volunteer labor that were actually often people paid under the table and below minimum wage. He found one nonprofit doing this contracting work that was an entirely fake nonprofit. It was a nonprofit that wasn't an actual nonprofit. It wasn't anything, actually. We have an opening day update of sorts, and another chapter opened in the Nathan Fletcher scandal this week. The woman who accused former supervisor Nathan Fletcher of sexual assault and harassment has hit some snags in her suit against him and the Metropolitan Transit System, her former employer. We'll catch you up on the latest from the court. And finally, Jacob has a story about a long-troubled school in Logan Heights that got a dramatic rebuild in recent years, but the school has been promised improvements for years, and students and families are actually fed up with the way things are. Jacob will share what he witnessed at a dramatic meeting in Logan Heights. We've got that and more coming at you this week. Stay with us.
We're in the middle of our spring fundraising campaign. We're trying to pull in 100 new members to the Voice community and raise $150,000. You can join the Voice community now at bosd.org/give. And when you give, you can write a little note that our whole team reads. Here are a few. You want to help me?
Yep. Ancy V said, "You have a great podcast!" Exclamation point. Fantastic. Thank you.
Love it. Kim L. says, "I love your dedication to local news coverage, and your podcast is one of my must-listens."
All right, Jen C., "The local paper doesn't give full or objective information sometimes. Please know, Scott, that you can contact me about news that I may help clarify for you."
Okay, thanks, Jen C.
Yeah, it must be a pretty important Jen C., right?
It's probably a well-known. All right, Rachel G. says, "The podcast is incredible. I first tuned in to hear the State of the City recap, and I was highly impressed. Now I listen every week. Glad to get you hooked. Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, everyone," right?
Yeah. If you join the campaign now and mention the podcast, we'll give you a shout out on the show, and you'll get the satisfaction of knowing that you support vital local journalism. We all know I don't know sports, but this is how little I know of sports. When earlier you were like, "Flyover," I was like, "Duh, don't planes fly over us all the time?" Geez. Like, why are you so excited, man? Until you said in the intro
The sound of freedom.
Sound of freedom.
Of jets roaring across the sky is a way to celebrate sport and freedom.
I will say that for, I think, most countries across the world.
A whole thing about the bellicosity of this nation.
Well, I'm just saying, I think that in most countries around the world, the sound of like military jets flying over would not necessarily represent freedom.
Yeah. All right. What else you got? You want to talk about the imperial dynasties of this country and subjugation of peoples all across the land?
Seems like you got a handle.
Wait, do they just fly randomly or like is the game starting? Is the game starting now?
God damn it.
Well, that's why you'll have your phone out.
So what happens at opening day? Is there's
which is today.
A lot of people excited at the park.
Yeah.
They have a big old, you know, like star-spangled banner. And then right at the crescendo.
Just to make sure that they're not getting too out of control, they fly over the jets to be like, hey, stay chill.
Stay chill.
They, at the crescendo of the star-spangled banner, usually, I don't know how the chronology exactly worked this time, but you want the patriotism to be so intense in everybody's bosom that the moment the Star-Spangled Banner is climaxing, the roar of airplanes, war-fighting airplanes, fly across and shake everybody to their bones so that you remember the true meaning of baseball, which is war.
I love this. I wish I was there.
Of course you do. And then I heard it, and nobody, and I, because we're downtown, and the You don't hear those kinds of jets. You hear normal, you know, jets coming in to fly to land with their passengers and their cargo. But this was
it was loud.
This was the
I
don't know what kinds of planes it was this time, Andrea.
Wait, he said my name.
Sometimes they do like a cargo, sometimes it's helicopter, but these seem like war fighting jets for sure.
You could tell by the bellicosity of them.
It is opening day. The Padres and the San Francisco Giants are playing right as we record this at Petco Park down the street. It's an exciting day. And then this evening, San Diego State will play in the Sweet 16 against UConn. UConn beat them rather decisively last year in the championship of March Madness.
Hey, they got it down to 5 with like 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I remember that.
17.
It got a little out of control after that.
Yeah.
And we, of course, have been very supportive of our San Diego sports teams. We like them to have a high level of integrity and accountability. And we last year uncovered, at least Will Huntsbury did, that the concession stands at Petco Park and other facilities, not here, not just here, but around the country, relied on supposed volunteer labor and nonprofits that brought the volunteers. And turns out that some of those nonprofits were not real. At least one of them wasn't real, didn't have an actual nonprofit status. It was a softball league that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. That seems like a flawed softball league. And then we also discovered that these volunteers staffing these concession stands were often not volunteers, and there were a lot of testimonies we got about people who got paid below minimum wage, if they got paid at all according to what their promises were, and were under the table. And that's not how things should work, especially in a public facility like that. The Padres, of course, pledged that things would change. They oversee Petco Park and contract the concession management to a big company called Delaware North. Delaware North said things are going to change. They actually asked the nonprofit that doesn't exist to leave. And Will decided with opening day coming, he's going to check in with them again. What'd they say?
They said nothing. Silence.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Now, Will had confirmed last year that there were some investigations. The local DA, for example, was looking into whether there was workplace crimes that occurred, wage theft or something like that. Mm-hmm. There was also some buzz about federal investigations. It's just been perfect radio silence since then, right? The won't even respond to us anymore.
Yeah, or not responding at all. But, you know, Will wanted to know, like, what changes exactly did you put in place to prevent this from happening again? Obviously, we had like all these follow-up questions and yeah, we didn't hear back. They didn't respond.
So we are going to turn the question to you folks. You go to Petco Park over the next few weeks and you go up and you buy a beer. Take a second and ask where the person selling you that good works, who they work for, or if they're volunteering. And we'd love to hear your responses. You can send them to scott@voiceofsandiego.org. That's me. I'm the Scott reference there. scott@voiceofsandiego.org. It has been exactly a year since the scandal involving former county supervisor Nathan Fletcher erupted into the public. Of course, he stepped away from his role as chairman of the Metropolitan Transit System. Then he stepped down as supervisor. He's now been replaced on the county board of supervisors. He still has yet to make any public appearance. Again, it's still jarring to me that 1 year ago, he was the most powerful public figure in San Diego as far as politicians. You know, he wasn't a star baseball player or anything, but he was a pretty familiar face, especially after COVID in San Diego. And then he just disappeared. And ever since then, he's been fighting for his reputation, but also for a lot of money, or at least to keep from having to spend a lot of money, as his accuser, Grecia Figueroa, pursues a case against him for sexual assault and harassment and a case against Metropolitan Transit System, whom the organization that she has accused of both creating a hostile work environment and failing to prevent sexual harassment and retaliating against her when it became known. So, again, remember, there was always two big questions we dealt with. One was, what happened? Because she alleges something violent, something sexual bullying, harassment, abuse, assault that occurred. He says that it was a consensual series of interactions or encounters. And the second question is, why did she get fired? We've gotten pretty far on that. Remember, we did a whole episode about what MTS revealed in its own independent investigation about what happened. Her performance was considered exceeding job requirements for a while. And then right about the time she started having this interaction with Nathan Fletcher, her performance sagged. They fired her, and it just so happened to be right after her contact with Nathan Fletcher ended.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
And
fair.
Another question looped in with that second one was, when did MTS know about their interactions, and at what point did they find out that this was happening? Which right. We also got an answer to, but that one was a little...
It's fairly clear that they got information that something was up between him and her.
Mm-hmm.
They still went ahead and fired her.
Mm-hmm.
And then later realized like how significant their that hint they had gotten mm-hmm. was. Mm-hmm. And maybe they should have put the brakes on the firing while they figured out what was going on between him and her.
Yeah. If you remember from that episode where we kind of unpacked that, don't want to get too much into that. But before she was fired, she was texting with a colleague and saying, like, I think... she was asked to leave, and she was saying, like, this is related to our board chair. And, you know, when her superiors were notified of these text messages, we kind of looked at them and we were like, that's kind of a moment to pause and say, why is this employee who handles our, you know, public relations saying that, you know, we want to fire her because of our board chair? That was a moment to pause, maybe, but it didn't happen.
Hey, you learn lessons all the time, right? So for the last 6 months, Fletcher's attorneys have been basically making the case that she was not the victim of some sort of assault here, that she was eager and enthusiastic participant in their trysts, and that he was, yeah, he made a lot of mistakes, but he shouldn't be accused of something as vile as what she has said occurred, right? Yeah.
And I think I would add to that that their argument is also that at times she was the one who pursued him as opposed to him pursuing her.
Right. And so this is a big deal. Again, I think they're trying to make the case that, yeah, he made some mistakes. Maybe he should have gotten in trouble for it, but he is not a monster, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's really important in the public sense, because if he ever wants to come back to public life, it's different if you have an affair versus if you have something, you know, awful and abusive that happened, right? And I think those are sort of the stakes here. There have been now some updates. I think the biggest update that came out of a hearing yesterday in court is that she is now a defendant herself. She is going to have to defend a lawsuit from him about a claim of defamation, that he is now suing her for defaming him. Now, when you sue somebody for defamation, you have to prove not only that what they said was incorrect, but that they knew it was incorrect and that it created substantial damage to the target of what they said, right? And so that's going to be a big thing. Amid all of this, the other update is that she has no attorney right now. Yeah. That she had the first attorney, Zach Schumacher, sued MTS and Fletcher last year at this time. He was replaced with the Pride Law Firm, and Jessica Pride in particular, the whole team at the Pride Law Firm, a well-known firm on a lot of these high-profile cases. They have now been either dismissed or have left the case. They've parted ways.
Do we have any insight as to exactly what happened there?
There was a hearing today on Thursday, and Jessica Pride from the Pride Law Firm was there, and she said that they were relieved, but there's no other, no deets.
Not relieved, like emotionally, like relieved.
No, they were relieved.
Yeah.
And they were no longer representing her.
Okay.
Grecia was there today on Thursday, and she just made a point to say that while she's parted ways with the law firm, that it was, there's no like negative feelings. That was like as much insight as we were going to get on what went down there.
Yeah. So Fletcher's attorneys, the reason they're having a hearing is because Fletcher's attorneys have accused her of destroying some evidence, some messages that they want to get, in particular messages between her and a friend. She now claims that those messages are between her and a therapist and thus should be protected. But she, that's all something that needs to be decided in a motion. This discussion was about their concern that she was going to destroy some of this evidence on her phone. The judge didn't seem, from what I could tell, very concerned about that, but he did agree to put a restraining order on the phone. Now, I thought restraining orders were on people and not devices.
I know. For a second, I thought, I was like, did I hear this wrong? Like, did he say temporary protection, like to protect the phone, But no, he said restraining order.
Yeah, he said restraining order on.
So what does that mean? She can't be like within 15 feet of her phone?
I think it means just don't mess with the phone.
Oh.
Like, don't delete anything.
Huh. Now, I think this is, I was always on the impression that text messages, you can't get rid of those. That, yeah, you might delete them from your phone, but they're out there and that they could be accessed at some point. So it's hard for me to understand why this is such a big deal. Then the judge during the hearing actually makes the case. It feels like you guys are doing a big performance for the media. Mm-hmm. And when he said that, like, you and I are like,
wow, what a subtweet.
And I think that there is a lot of that to that. Like, there is a lot of jockeying going on right now about these things, because I think this is a critical moment. This is before a lot of these big depositions will happen where things will be into the record. And now that she's changing attorneys too, I'm sure Fletcher's attorneys see that as a very big vulnerability, if not admission in some sense that they don't have a case or that the case is going poorly. So big moment for this trial, for this case. And again, we still don't have clarity on that big question about what happened between them. There has been a lot more evidence that obviously she was more interested in him than the first initial messages that came out that she released were. Mm-hmm. But again, as her attorneys have said, she can withdraw consent at any time.
How common is it for a defendant, or I guess in this instance, a plaintiff, to go through so many lawyers or law firms throughout the course of a case? I mean, do you have any insight into that?
I don't think this is common at all. The defense, Fletcher's team, wanted to actually have the judge take the phone and create a copy of it, all of it.
Some sort of backup,
because they were, again, making the case that she couldn't be trusted with it. At one point, he just kind of looks at her and he's like, are we going to be cool? And she's like, yeah, I'll be cool.
And he's like, it sounds like what they're concerned is like, you might delete stuff. Like, what reassurance can you give them that you won't do this? And she was like, I don't know, like, what else they want really here.
So this is going to be a big deal going forward. Again, I think to the larger implications, establishing in the public record without a doubt that he was not a predator and was just, you know, irresponsible with his dalliances, I think is a big part of what's happening here, whether it's for a political recovery or just for, you know, the family and the integrity of the people involved. And so I think that's what's at stake with all of this stuff. But I do want to take a minute and think, like, look, would he have had to resign if it were just an affair? And to me, that is like unquestionably yes. If I was involved with an affair of a low-level staffer here, I'd be out like the moment it became known, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're saying here is really what gets to the heart of it. If you're having an affair, it can be a moral failing, an ethical failing, but if it's with somebody who is, again, kind of essentially your underling in some capacity, that certainly is a much more significant concern.
That
right?
Like power dynamic, it's something I feel like it sort of sits around this lawsuit and this conversation. Mm. But like nobody really is like arguing that as much as you would think they would. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's kind of my sense.
Right. At the heart is the question of, does he have the power over her? Because that's what they always say is like, well, he has no power to affect her employment. That comes up. Both MTS has made that point and Fletcher's attorneys several times. But that's kind of ridiculous to me, because if you're the chairman of an organization, you have power over the leadership of that organization. Like if they had the leadership of the organization wants a lot of things. They want budgets approved. They want projects approved. They want their own evaluations are at stake, their own performance.
Yeah, I mean, outcomes. That assertion just doesn't pass the smell test. Like, I don't buy that.
If the chairman of the organization wants an employee hired or gone, mm-hmm. there's a lot of ways they can exercise that power beyond just like literally hiring or literally firing or literally giving a raise to somebody. Uh-huh. And so I don't buy that. You know, on the other hand, like, yeah, it is a big difference between an assault or you know, a tryst that's consensual that you know is improper, obviously, in a setting like that. But again, if our chairman of our board had something like that, they'd be gone immediately too. Like this isn't a question of like he had undue consequences because of what happened. Now, was he defamed? Did he suffer damages beyond that? Mm-hmm. That's what they're gonna have to make. And that case hasn't actually hit the public record. We just heard them reference it very briefly in this hearing today.
Mm-hmm. And Gracia, because she no longer has an attorney representing her, she's in the process of finding a new attorney. She confirmed to us that she plans to continue this case. So she is going to find a new attorney. But there's a hearing tomorrow, Friday, where she will be representing herself. But currently, because Pride Law, you know, is no longer representing her, out of courtesy, they represented her today on Thursday, and they will represent her on Friday as well.
Yeah, the judge gave her, I think, April 5th is the goal to get a new attorney. We'll see what happens.
So, you know, one thing that I've been wondering about a lot, this whole case has gotten so muddied, and all of kind of the assumptions that were made, or maybe not assumptions, but a lot of what seemed to be true early on, it's question marks now. And so I am curious. I mean, what do you think the odds are that Nathan Fletcher will end up back on a ballot in the near future?
Well, I've heard him say he's not going to run again ever before. And
you also heard him say he was Republican.
And he became county supervisor later. I think I did a little mental exercise in my head about where he would potentially try to make a comeback. And the only office I could think about that would be open, that would be an option, that would be far enough in the future that you could see momentum build would be the mayor's race in 2028 in San Diego. Now, I would bet if you were to get him on the phone, he'd be like, I'm never running for office again, I'm done or whatever. But yeah, who knows?
Are you passionate about resolving conflicts and making positive impact in the world? Then USD's Conflict Management and Resolution Master's program may be for you. Learn to address conflicts at all levels, from personal disputes to global crises. Join the Kroc School's dedicated community fostering peace and understanding while you acquire practical skills to navigate diverse settings. Apply now and be the change you want to see in the world. Visit sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. That's sandiego.edu/peace/VOSD. Join culture creator Ramel Wallace, museum CEO Micah Parzon, philanthropist Erwin Jacobs, and urban agriculturist Diane Moss on Season 2 of Stop and Talk, a podcast about the future of the San Diego region. How can we create a vibrant region that celebrates our cultural richness and economic strength? Find out and hear other San Diego experts on Stop and Talk. Discover Seasons 1 and 2 now at stopandtalkpodcast.com. That's stopandtalkpodcast.com.
For a long time, we have been following the progress or hopes for a school in Logan Heights, Logan Memorial. It used to be Memorial Prep. It's since been rebuilt, but let's go back and talk about what's happened to it since, because there was a huge meeting about it recently, and you were there, a lot of emotions. So take us from the beginning. What was interesting about Logan Memorial?
You know, about nearly a decade ago, at the site where Logan Memorial now is, was this middle school called Memorial Prep. And over the decades, Memorial Prep had undergone a whole lot of changes, right? It was a public school. It was a traditional public school. It was a charter school. It was a middle school. It was all these things. But throughout all of these changes, one thing remained the same, which was it had this really pretty rough reputation, right? A reputation for maybe not being the safest school, a reputation for maybe not being a school that set kids up for much success. And so all of these changes.
It was dingy too. I remember speaking there one time and looking around. It was like an old, like, car mechanics warehouse or something. It was just dark. And I remember thinking, like, this is just not a very good learning environment. Yeah, yeah. And they went ahead and addressed that.
Yeah. So back in 2015 or when the plans first started to develop, you know, basically the district decided we're done with this school. The community deserves better. And they embarked on what would be a years-long project to first kind of come up with a new formulation for this school. Like, what is it going to look like? What is it going to be? And then to actually demolish the old school and build a new one. And what they ended up with was, for the community, really genuinely a dream come true, right? The promises that this school that they made to this community were incredible.
And we're going to build a new school.
Yeah.
Nice school. You know, I was there when they were kind of demolishing it. Mm-hmm. I had written about, because some of those older walls had murals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You told me.
And some of the
this.
Muralists were really upset that, you know, the murals would be destroyed. Uh-huh. But yeah, it looks completely different now.
Well, there was a lot of history there, right? I mean, you know, even now, even when I went to that meeting, there were people saying, I went to Memorial Prep. I mean, this community still is very, there's still many, many people who remember it.
Well, they didn't just rebuild it too. They set it up as a completely different school, right?
That's exactly right. So this school, the promises were many. And this genuinely, I don't think it's a stretch to say that this was kind of a visionary, innovative project, right? The way they pitched it was that it would be a cradle to career educational experience. You know, you could come as they would offer prenatal services to expectant mothers. They would offer, you know, childcare from like 6 months to high school, you know, and, but that childcare itself and the educational experience was also very unique. It was going to be a Montessori school for the younger grades that would transition into this project-based learning environment akin to, you know, what High Tech High does, right? And in addition to that, there were all of these other elements. You know, there would be these career focuses that got kids ready for the careers of the future. There were all of these things. And what was actually really, really excellent about this is that many of these things were decided and designed in collaboration with the community, which, as somebody who's been covering education in San Diego Unified in particular for a couple of years, collaboration and communication are not two things that people generally say the district does very well. And so when this school opened, after the district had spent nearly $200 million on the rebuild, which was at that point the most expensive construction project it had ever embarked on, there was hope. There was a lot of hope, and for good reason. You know, they'd been, the community had been told all of these wonderful things, and all of these wonderful things had at least partly been decided on with the community. Since then, though, things have not really gone as planned, and the community feels very shortchanged. In one sense, this was supposed to be this kind of grand mea culpa, right? You know, for many, many years, the district had not invested what they should have in this community. For many years, this was a community that had some of the highest concentrations of students, yet it had never had its own high school.
And when we, about 10 years ago, looked into the schools that are most avoided by parents, that was the top of the list. Like something like Memorial 90% Prep. Of the students who could go to that school avoided it.
And it was in large part because of that reputation that it had developed, right? And so all of this was, at least in part, the goal was to do this amazing thing for the community and hope that the community came back, right? And enrolled and trusted the district to care for the kids.
So physically, you're saying it looked a lot better, but what
it looks
were,
incredible.
What were some of the things sort of underneath that shine that weren't going well?
You know, one thing that as you said, the community has no problem with is the outside. But one thing that I heard from multiple parents at that meeting was, is this going to be the next Lincoln? And I think that's a really, really potent
Why
sort
is
of
that
example.
Such an indictment?
Because Lincoln had experienced something very similar.
You're talking about Lincoln High School.
Lincoln High School. Lincoln High, for many years, it was a struggling school that was kind of plagued by a variety of issues, and the district said, enough with this. We're going to tear everything down and start over, and we're going to give you a school that you can be proud of. And they did, in one sense. Like Logan Memorial, the school they built was beautiful. It was state-of-the-art, and it offered a lot of hope to the community. But over the years that Lincoln High has been open, what they didn't seem to figure out is what to do about what's going on inside. And that was exactly what was happening at Logan Memorial.
How to, essentially, one of the biggest issues is just how to keep kids there, right? There was the still enrollment crises there. And then you've even written recently about some of the performance issues that still hover above him.
Yeah, essentially, you know, the academic opportunities that were being offered at that school didn't seem to match up with what was promised, and didn't seem to match up. The resources that were going into those didn't seem to match up with the resources that were put into the brick and mortar projects. And that is essentially what parents have said about what's going on at Logan Memorial, right? So the Montessori program, there are worries that it's not being rolled out fast enough, that maybe it might be on the chopping block. None of this has been confirmed by the district for me. There are the project-based learning that was promised for older grades. This doesn't seem to be materializing. The dual immersion program that they were told was going to be created, that isn't there, which is pretty shocking, because this
the
is
three of the core principles and promises that they brought the new building with aren't happening.
Yes, and so that is really what has concerned the community to a great degree. And so for months and months, they've been trying to, you know, work with the district to try to ensure that these things are being taken care of. But all of that patience hasn't really amounted to a whole lot. Right, the community feels like they've been getting jerked around. They feel like they've been getting gaslit. They feel like there are all of these ways that the district just still isn't listening to them and taking them seriously. And so,
Yeah.
That brings us to the meeting.
That brings us to the meeting. Essentially, this past Friday, community members gathered at the library that's kind of surrounded a little bit by Logan Memorial. And they gathered to sort of hold the district's feet to the fire. And so the PTSA, the Parent Teacher Student Association there, sent out invitations to all of the community and invited their representative on the school board, Richard Barrera, to this meeting where they were just there to, you know, kind of voice their frustrations. And there were a lot of frustrations, all the things that I mentioned about programs that the district hadn't followed through with, some of the old things that plagued Memorial Prep coming back, you know, discipline. I recently wrote a story about how even after this rebuild, there is still a significant discipline issue at the school. Last year, the suspension rate of the school was, I think, 5.5 times higher than the district's average. And so all of these things that were promised, not including the beautiful school that was built, all of the follow through seems to be lacking. And that's what the community really, really wanted to express.
Set the scene real quick. How many people are there?
Yeah.
What does it look like?
The room off of the library is this big kind of meeting room with these beautiful murals depicting, Moctezuma being notified of Cortez's arrival in Mexico. The PTSA set up this big circle of chairs with a table of refreshments. And there were probably about 30 parents and community members there. Many, many women, many, many Spanish speakers, mothers with strollers and whatnot. And, you know, a translator, because many of the people who spoke in Spanish. And, you know, these frustrations just kind of tumbled out of them over and over. And it almost felt like they couldn't stop themselves from saying these things, because they finally had somebody, a higher up, a district representative there to listen to them. And Richard Barrera listened. He responded kind of in a way that I think surprised all of them, which was he doubled down on all of the promises and said that we are going to make this happen for you. You deserve this. Nobody has come to me to vote on whether or not we're going to cut X, Y, or Z program. And so those programs are not being cut. We're going to make sure that this school has the resources it needs to accomplish the vision. And we're going to get you these resources by the beginning of next school year. I think there was a genuine relief felt by most of the people in that room. There were, you know, genuine sighs of reliefs and some applause. But at the same time, they've heard promises before. They heard promises for years about Logan Memorial, and yet here we are. And Richard Barrera is not new on the school board. He was there from the very beginning. And so it was also clear that despite the fact that what they were hearing was reassuring, they weren't going to kind of sit on their laurels and just expect Richard or anyone else to do work for them. And so the striking moment was, you know, by the end, you know, they were supposed to split off into groups and devise these solutions to how they can move forward with this. But, you know, they couldn't split off into groups because people just kept speaking, kept telling their stories, kept reciting their frustrations. And so it was a little unclear exactly what happened next until somebody brought up the possibility of a protest. And immediately that caught on for everybody, right? People were saying, we can tell everybody who isn't here, we can have kids walk out, maybe that'll affect the district's bottom line, get them to really pay attention.
So Barrera's promises aren't helping this get better. They're actually getting more fired up.
I think that Barrera's promises were certainly reassuring, but they weren't willing to just go on Barrera's promises, right? And by this point, he'd left. He had to go to another...
Well, that's always a vibe.
Yeah, he had to go to another... Another engagement, but you know, at the very end, Vetti looked around the room and says, okay, so who all is interested in doing a protest? And every hand in the room shot up, which was, I think, a very striking thing.
That's fascinating. So the I think it'd be interesting to zoom out now and look at what's happening in the broader, the district's going through mass layoffs at this moment, right? Pink slips are going out everywhere. The
including some people at Logan.
And the teachers union is protesting them. But there's no sign that there's some, you know, magic pot of money. The state has a huge budget deficit. It's and long-term doesn't look great at all. But I think the other part that's really affecting and interesting here is that it has been fairly simple or easy for the district to raise taxes to build things over the last 20 years. But it has had nothing of the sort to pay for what 90% of its budget is, 99% of its budget, which is just people.
Well, and that's important to kind of delineate, right? So what you're referring to is the bond measures the district has passed. But those bond measures that they've passed are restricted to essentially things like construction and like infrastructure things, right? And so despite the fact that they've passed these bond measures that total and I don't even know the probably billions of dollars, not one red penny of that can go to providing the programs inside of those classrooms.
Yeah, it used to be it could replace some of the money that was going to maintenance and thus free up money for some of the teachers and other educators, but that's all been exhausted now.
Yeah.
But it's why you can have a new facility in some of these places and yet, you know, some of the structural sort of people issues may stay very similar for a long time.
Yeah.
So you have to look at this and wonder what sort of backup do these promises actually have? Can he deliver on what he said he would?
And I think that's the big question mark and the thing that I'm going to be following as we move forward. You know, this first story is not the end of the road for this. This is an incredibly, incredibly important story, not only to this community, but to the district. I mean, it is the district's second chance at creating transformational educational change after Lincoln. And you know, while there are certainly a lot of excellent people, excellent teachers and hard workers at Lincoln doing the best they can, I don't think anybody would look at that school and say, this is the success story that we hoped it would be. And watching this meeting, watching this community stand up, watching this community take hold of this issue and not let it go was truly inspiring. And I think that the hope that they feel and the hope that they felt when this school was built isn't gone, but it's kind of transmuted into this other thing, this determination to ensure that they get what they were promised.
You can see that story for yourself now at VOSD.org/Jacob, Jacob with a K, at VOSD.org/Jacob. Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Voice of San Diego podcast, the most popular public affairs podcast recorded in San Diego that has a new intro song. It's the most popular podcast that got a new intro song this week. You can support our whole team and this podcast for our spring fundraising campaign at VOSD.org/give. You can contribute, become part of this community, make all of this possible at VOSD.org/give. I'm Scott Lewis, CEO and editor chief at Voice San Diego. Andrea Lopez Villafana is our managing editor. Jacob McQuinney is our education reporter and the composer of that theme music. Thank you, Jacob. Nate John's our producer. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.